Hello, and welcome to Birdies and Beer. This is the Unique Lifestyle Podcast featuring all things golf and craft beer. Recording from the Business Radio X studio outside Atlanta, here's your host, Tim Stoltz.
Thank you, Mike. That's Mike Salmon, our producer. Welcome to everybody who's joined us. If you're a return listener, thank you so much for coming back. And if you're brand new, then we are glad to have you. A couple of great guests today. Our Birdies guest from the world of golf is the CEO of the organization Golf Women Mean Business, Patrina King. Hello, Patrina.
Hello, how are you?
I'm terrific. So great to have you here.
Glad to be here.
And our beer guest is Nancy Palmer, the executive director of the Georgia Craft Brewers Guild. Welcome, Nancy.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Mike, let's kick off our birdie segment.
Sounds like a plan.
As mentioned, Patrina King is here from the golf world, the CEO of Golf Women Mean Business, but that is not all Patrina does. She is an author, having written a book called Nine Holes, Nine Goals, a step-by-step guide to doing business on the golf course. She was named one of the Network Journal's 40 Under 40 Achievers. She has numerous other awards and honors, and this isn't even her full-time job. She's an HR professional. So before we go very deep, Patrina, I follow you on Twitter and saw some pictures of a brand new pink golf cart.
Yes.
Would you like to explain yourself?
What had happened? No. So no, that's my new that's the new colors that I'm going with. I joined a sorority and that's our colors, and of course I have to represent.
Absolutely.
You know, kind of cross the lines there. So I'm excited about it. They're not quite finished with it, but I can't wait to get it out there and, you know, be seen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what led you to start Golf Women Mean Business?
Okay, so it goes back to a blown opportunity. I blew probably, I'll say, a multi-million dollar opportunity on the golf course. And it's because I was playing competitive golf versus business golf. And it, long story short, I met a guy out there who was looking for a vendor. And I could have been the supplier, played golf with him, kind of playing around with the stereotype of golf is known to be white male dominated sport. I was a young black female, so I was trying to make sure I did everything right, because as you know, golf tells the character of people. Because of that, I made sure I knew all the rules and everything before I played with him, and we played by every rule. Like, bogeys didn't exist. I mean, bogeys existed, but mulligans did not exist. And so after that round of golf, he didn't talk to me again. So because I was raised to play competitively. And, you know, my dad, he taught me when you go and play, you always play to win. And when I told him about this situation, he laughed at me. And, you know, he said, well, you don't beat the person you want business from. And I'm like, thank you for that expensive lesson. You know,
that would have been helpful information prior to the round.
Right. And so really, because women don't get that experience or exposure to, you know, access to someone, I felt like I needed to really teach women how to not do what I did.
And what in your opinion is keeping more women from playing golf in general, and certainly from playing golf in a business perspective?
Well, women, what I found is we don't like to go into areas that are super unfamiliar and already male dominated. So we don't, and then when it is unfamiliar, we kind of got to know everything before even taking a step. And again, as you know, golf is not something that's fly by night. It takes time to even play. It takes more time to even learn. And then to put it into your already busy schedule when you are a CEO or director in corporate or your own business, it's just kind of overwhelming. So the old stereotype of it being male dominated and then just not really knowing where to start to learn is what's keeping them away.
And how'd you get started in golf?
So my dad taught me how to play. I started playing at 5.
Wow.
And by 7, I was competitive. I was the chipper of the year somewhere. So, yeah, he just taught me at a very young age, and I played throughout high school. Yeah,
so. Do you Do you feel like women need to already be golfers to take advantage of golf women being business? Or do you start women off from scratch?
Yes. Yeah, so my ideal client will be the clueless person, the clueless female executive, I'll say, a decision maker in corporate. And if they own their own business, they need to meet with other decision makers and they don't know anything. That will be my client, my ideal client.
And what would you do with them?
I will start them off with rules and etiquette, because if you can learn rules and etiquette, you can get through a round of golf. I mean, because most people are not good at golf. Men, too.
And then what? What would be the next step?
So after we teach them rules and etiquette, we'd actually introduce them to how to hold the club and actually do the swinging. And we don't even really spend a whole lot of time on that. We really focus on getting them out on the course, because people become driving range superstars, and then they think they got it. And then when it's time to play in a real environment, they're back clueless again and never show back up. So we really focus on getting them out into the golf arena, onto the course, walking them through how to get through a round of golf for business.
And this is a membership-driven organization.
It is membership-driven.
How many members do you currently have?
So as of last night, we are up to 265 in Atlanta. And we're also in the D.C. area. We have about 40 there. And then our newest location is St. Louis, and we got about 16 there. It's a little different. And then, like, the more north we go or west we go, the weather isn't as forgiving right. as it is here in Georgia. So it kind of makes sense. And then I'm here, too, so...
And how did you pick those particular cities?
They picked me.
Oh, okay.
They did.
Very good.
Yeah. It was Georgia. You know, I just kind of wanted to do it here. And then people started contacting me. And then you vet people and all of that. And so that's where we ended up.
Very good. Mm-hmm. And what type of events, tournaments does the organization host and have that would attract people to become new members?
Yeah. So we actually start our events on like social events. Because Golf Women Mean Business is business and golf. So in order to do business successfully on the golf course, you need to have your business acumen together as well. So we do business training, you know, depending on what you need to know in business, just offer different things all the way from, you know, how to dress for the higher level client to building business credit and things like that. And then social events, something fun like Topgolf. We do that once a month. And then what that does is bring these women together who are just as clueless. Everyone in the room is clueless when it comes to golf. And then they learn together. Because what I didn't mention is I had 36 golf scholarship offers in high school to go to probably any college in the United States. I did not take one of those, not one, because it wasn't fun. It wasn't any females there. I had to play with my dad, his old friends. You know, it's just not something I was going to sign up for. And so I feel like if we get women together to find at least one or two good friends to learn and play together and stay together, they can continue.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely. How does one find Golf Women Mean Business?
Golf Women Mean Business is online at golfwomenmeanbusiness.com. And the phone number, normally I like to take those calls myself because, you know, I'm the one that people want to talk to for some reason. I take it. My number, direct number, is 678-861-4183.
Very good.
I would think one of the biggest challenges you may have is wrapping their head, the ladies that you bring on the program, wrapping their heads around the fact that you don't have to be great. You don't have to be that good of a golfer. You just need to be fun to play with.
Exactly.
I'm a horrible golfer.
Thank you for saying that.
Yes, but I would think that that's very tough because they don't want to embarrass themselves. It's okay to pick up the ball because the end game is to grow your business, to create those relationships on the golf course.
Absolutely.
And the golf is almost secondary, and I would think that's your biggest challenge.
It is, and what I have to do, because we start our trainings online, because, again, it's a time issue for a lot of women. They don't know how to put it in their time, in their schedule. So we do $5 trainings online. Like, there's no excuse. And I have to show video. I mean, not that I let them know that I'm out there taping people, but I show video of guys shanking the ball, putting it in the water, you know, getting upset, throwing clubs, letting them know, you know, it's not just you. It's going to happen. So
you've seen me play, obviously.
Oh, it was you in that video.
Compiling that video would take 5 minutes at any golf course in the United States.
Yes. So now you're right.
How do you find the members?
It's really, I have been very lucky. I go to a lot of events. I personally do a lot of networking myself. And a lot of my ideal client will be, of course, I told you the female client, but then also in corporate. So a lot of these resource groups. And what we do is kind of talk to the people in the business resource groups like banks and like Georgia Power and things like that. And they know that they need golf. And they're just looking for someone to give it to them like this on a platter, you know, and I do that for them. So it's either that, and a lot of it is word of mouth. So I'm just very lucky at this point. So we're going to knock on whatever wood is in here and keep it going that way.
You might have a new client in me.
Excellent.
It sounds like an excellent program. And your diagnosis of what keeps me back is exactly right.
Is it?
Yeah. I feel like I have to know everything before I get started.
Yeah.
And you feel like you're going to embarrass yourself, but then you realize the men are just as bad in most cases.
Yes.
So I don't know. I think I'm probably pretty bad.
To that point,
yes.
This is a two-pronged question. Have any men approached you about trying to get in this program? And have you gotten any resistance or pushback from men outside who are like, we don't need women playing golf in business?
Okay, those are two great questions. I've gotten several men that are interested. I talked to one yesterday who is going to sign up. And I have men that kind of already play and just want to support. You know, they want to see more women out there. But then this one guy, he's always like, well, when are you going to bring the men out? You know, and he could have other, you know, ideas, but... But, you know, so they're very supportive. I have not had any pushback. So, again, we're going to just hope it stays that way. But it's been received very well. We talk to different golf courses around, you know, we like to host 3-day golf intensives. And in that 3-day golf, and that's one event that I didn't say. So that 3-day golf intensive, we teach women everything in 3 days. And then it comes with a business golfer certification. And then they're like, what is a certification? So any certification says that you can do something well, or you are experienced in that. And so it's teaching them or giving them the certification that they are certified or able to play golf for business. So in every golf course that we have approached have been very open to allowing us to practice there or at least train there.
That's terrific. And mm-hmm. And we need to grow the game in every way possible.
Absolutely.
So if we can get more women playing golf and business golf, that's terrific.
Absolutely.
Thank you for being here, Petrina.
Thank you for having me.
And remind the ladies, too, they have their own tees. They already get a little bit of an advantage anyway, you know?
Yeah, and that's a great thing you brought up because they're like, Petrina, do you still hit from the red tees? Or I'm like, absolutely. I am a female, and I am not on tour.
You're going to take
so
advantage of
take
that, right? That's your right.
That's right.
Exactly.
You bet.
Yes. There have been times, and again, I'm just giving way too much information, Tim, where I've hit the ball and I didn't reach the woman's tee.
I've got video of some of that. That may have been you
I'm
on that
sure
video.
It probably was. Make sure the audio is down so you don't hear any.
Yeah, no,
bad
I don't
words.
Show any of that. Not at all. Just never know. So.
All right. Thanks again, Mike. Let's move on to our beer segment.
I could use one right now.
Absolutely. So budding golfer Nancy Palmer joins us, the executive director of the Georgia Craft Brewers Guild. Also an award winner, by the way, the first woman to receive the Brewers Association FX Matt Defense of the Industry Award. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about your background, Nancy.
So I've been the executive director of the Craft Brewers Guild for, it looks like, 5 years now. And the first person they've hired, and so far the only one they've hired. So when I started with the organization, we were just, you know, 15 breweries in Georgia that were members, and the industry, as you might have noticed, has grown a lot since then. It's been a very exciting ride, and I've learned a lot of things along the way.
Good. And obviously, if you're the only executive director at this point, you must be doing something right. So
yeah, I'd like to think so, or at least, you know, I'm doing enough stuff.
There you go. So what is the goal of the guild? What is the ultimate...
So the Brewers Objective. Guild is a business league. We're a trade association. So our members are members for the purposes of kind of pooling resources and deciding what we want to be able to do. The Brewers Association is the national trade association. And upon looking at the legal landscape from state to state, they recognized that so much of alcohol policy is dealt with at the state and local level, and that really investing in these state organizations was the way that we were going to get the most change in favor of craft breweries across the country. And so the Brewers Association really pushed states to create these organizations, and they've been a tremendous help for us. And so a lot of our job is to look at laws and regulations and see what we can do to change them, make them favorable towards brewers. And then oftentimes state guilds, once they kind of end up in a favorable business environment, will move on to doing some marketing, beer trails, that kind of thing. I don't think we've quite graduated to that yet. We're still very focused on our legal and regulatory environment here in Georgia.
And there was a huge law change in this state last
year,
am I correct?
There was. Yeah, we passed a big piece of legislation, Senate Bill 85. And it was passed in, I guess, March of last year and then signed by the governor and went into effect September 1st. And since September 1st, breweries are now allowed to sell beer direct to consumers when a consumer comes into the brewery. We used to have kind of a roundabout system where you would buy an educational tour, and with that came a some very limited amount of free beer. Now it is like a normal relationship that you have with, you know, your butcher and your baker. You walk in, you can give them money, they can give you beer. There is an annual cap, and there is a cap of the amount of beer a person can take to go from a brewery, but those are very generous caps. And so right now, breweries can sell beer direct to the public, and we were the last state to do this, but we're all very excited, and our businesses have been taking advantage ever since September 1st.
That's great. Does every state have a guild?
I think so. Yes. Okay. I think every state has a guild, and I think right now we're at a count of 39 executive directors, so full-time people who have my job in other states.
Gotcha.
Why was Georgia so late to the game? Why were they the last state to pass that?
That's a question that I get asked a lot, and I think my answer would have been different a few years ago, kind of because people are just meaner here or something, but that's not the case. I think it's that I've really come to learn in politics that the decisions are made by the people that show up, and we just hadn't shown up. And so when we started showing up, we were able to get legislation passed our first year down at the Capitol. I registered as a lobbyist. We also hired contract lobbyists. Our first year, we got legislation passed. The next year, we got a couple of concessions. And then that third year is when we got SB 85, which is a really fast trajectory to go from no direct sales to essentially full direct sales in just 3 years. And so I think that really it was about getting organized, showing up the Capitol and saying this is what we need, and we were really heard.
So what percentage of your time in 2017, early 2018, or well, I guess 2016, mm-hmm. 2017 was spent on SB 85?
An incredible amount of my time, more than 100% somehow. I do have a lot of administrative tasks inside of the guild, and we also manage a relationship with the Department of Agriculture, which is one of our inspection agencies, and the Department of Revenue, which is another inspection agency that does all of our regulation. And then on top of that, we have federal agencies that we manage and deal with as well, on top of events. There's a lot going on in the industry.
One of those events was your July meeting yesterday, is that correct?
Yeah, so we all of the brewers of Georgia, or all of the guild members, get together once a quarter at a different brewery. This last meeting, I was able to pull in some help from the Brewers Association. So we had Neil Witte come in and talk about quality assurance, which is an important topic inside of the craft brewing industry. We have a lot of young breweries that might not have 100% of the right programs in place, and so it's something that we talk about a lot. And then we also had Bart Watson, who's the chief economist for the Brewers Association, come and talk about some of the statistics of what's going on in Georgia and what's going on in the Southeast and then nationwide, what we're seeing as far as beer trends are concerned.
And what is the guild focused on now? What's the future hold?
Oh, that's the million-dollar question. I'm sure that the lobbyists on the other side of this would love to know what we're considering. So I think that we'll really nail down a legislative agenda going into October so that we're ready coming into January when the legislative session starts. I do think that there's some traditional things that go on in other states. The trajectory tends to be that you do tasting room sales, which we've done, and then the next things that you look at are self-distribution, which would allow a brewery to sell beer directly to a retailer, and then that retailer can resell it to the public. And then also something called franchise law reform, which is a change in the relationship between wholesalers and brewers, which is more or less one-sided right now towards the wholesalers. And so there's some ways you can tweak that relationship in law to make it a little more even. I don't know that we're going to tackle either of those this year or anytime soon. That's kind of the traditional trajectory. One thing that I'm keeping my eye on is alcohol delivery in the state of Georgia. We're looking at alcohol shipping, potentially. That's certainly something that companies like Amazon are interested in. And then also there's a number of companies like Minibar, Caviar, Postmates, Seamless, Drizzly. These are all companies that are in the business of driving alcohol and have it delivered to your door. And I think that Georgia is going to be tackling that issue sooner rather than later.
Sooner, we hope, yes.
Yes, I think it's on its way.
It's a good thing. You recently, I read, you announced a partnership with Lyft as well. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
So Lyft approached us, and we had been talking about it internally, wanting to do a partnership with a ride-sharing service. And so what we've done is launched a partnership, and Lyft has been an incredible partner for us. What happens is if you go to a brewery and take a Lyft there, you can show that brewery that you took a Lyft to get there, and they'll give you a coupon code for 50% off of your ride home. That's or to terrific. Your next destination. And really, we want to encourage people to, you know, consume responsibly,
absolutely.
To enjoy themselves at breweries, but also to be safe. And so far, we've got, I think, 9 breweries that have signed up. At our meeting yesterday, we had 3 more say they want to join. So I imagine that by the end of the month, we'll have almost everyone ready to go.
That's terrific.
It's very exciting.
And if Mike and I wanted to start our own craft brewery,
mm-hmm.
what are the steps that one goes through to make that happen?
First things first, I'd like to think that I put you through my Scared Straight program and try very hard to talk you out of it. But if you're resilient and you make it through the Scared Straight program, it depends on where you want to be. First things first is you make sure that your local government allows breweries. And if they don't have a regulation for breweries, then you need to go to your city council or county government and have one written and put in.
And would the guild help with that?
The Guild does help with that from time to time. We try to have a statewide focus, but we definitely have some language that works in a lot of cities that we can kind of help along in other cities. Cities we've experienced are very brewery positive. So we haven't had a lot of cities who really want to fight back. It's just about giving them the right tools. Then you need to find your equipment. Most people think the first thing they need is a logo and an IPA recipe. But those are actually pretty late in the game. You'll need to get a federal brewer's permit, which right now is a 4-month to 6-month process. You'll need to hire an attorney. That federal brewer's permit means that you already have your physical location and also your equipment on order. And then once you have your federal brewer's permit, you can apply for your local. And then local, you can apply for your state. And once you have all of your licenses stacked up and you have your IPA recipe, then you can start brewing. Realistically, the licensing process is at least 6 months, if not longer. And the raising the money and buying your equipment process is about, 8 months at the shortest. Really, what we're seeing is kind of an 18-month window would be the fastest from concept to getting the doors open.
Sounds like too much trouble, though. We'll stick with what we've done.
She scared me straight.
Good. That's all I had to do. I didn't even talk about all the agencies you have to deal with.
But apparently, Nancy, not enough people are being scared straight because it seems like these are popping up on every corner and everybody knows somebody who's being a craft brewer. I asked this question to a guest on the first show, and I'm going to repeat the question to you and get your perspective from the Craft Brewers Guild, and that is, is there a concern that the quote-unquote bubble might burst at some point because it seems like everybody is getting into it these days?
I am not even a little bit concerned that the bubble is going to burst. There is a lot of space for particularly very small breweries. So what's interesting about Georgia is because we didn't have these tap rooms, everyone had to go through distribution, and that's how they made 100% of their money. Now, selling beer at wholesale does not make you as much money as selling beer direct to consumer, as you can imagine. So we've had a lot of breweries grow relatively fast in order to kind of get into a profit margin territory that makes sense for them when they were doing 100% wholesale. But when you have this direct-to-consumer business where you can be in the tap room, you can sell just what you make to the people that come in your door, your profit margins are way better. And it allows people to open a lot smaller and grow at a more reasonable rate and potentially never even get to the size of a brewery like Gate City. So what we've seen in the United States is 75% of the breweries in the country make fewer than 1,000 barrels. 1,000 barrels is 2,000 kegs. We'll do it in kegs. So 75% of the breweries in the country make fewer than 2,000 kegs. We basically have zero of those breweries in Georgia. So we've got a lot of space to open these kind of small breweries. And what I see with our, when we're tracking breweries and planning and breweries and dreaming, is a lot of people are looking at that much smaller business model. And I think that, you know, we rank 48th right now in breweries per capita. Even if we got to average, we would have 2.5 times as many as we have right now. I think that we've got plenty of space to open, particularly very small breweries.
So that's job security for you.
That's what I'm talking about.
And speaking of job, you said you've been in this role 5 years. Mm-hmm. So where were you 6 years ago, and how did you get to be the executive director?
Well, you know, like every fourth grader, I dreamed of being a beer lobbyist one day and then just made it happen. So I graduated from the University of Georgia with a philosophy degree and determined that my only marketable skill set was I knew a lot about drinking. And so I actually, at 24, passed my sommelier exam and then worked in the wine industry for quite a while. And when I found the Guild, I had my own consulting company working for restaurants that needed a better wine list but couldn't afford or didn't need a full-time sommelier on staff. And then I also did some private buying. And so when I was doing that, I took on the Guild as a client, I guess, 6 years ago now, and just got hooked. And I love the industry.
That's terrific. It's terrific. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. And the Georgia Craft Builders Guild. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I got that out. And there's a website people
yes.
can visit?
Yeah, georgiabrewed.com or georgiacraftbrewersguild.org. And there's ways to get in touch with us through the website. And to be fair, I'm the only one that sees those. So there's a way to get in touch with me through the website.
Is Georgia spelt out?
It is.
Okay.
Well, again, I want to thank Patrina King,
yes,
Golf
you.
Women Mean Business, and Nancy Palmer of the Georgia Guild of Craft Brewers. Thanks to Mike Salmon and Business Radio X. You can find links to this and future podcasts at birdiesandbeer.com, as well as links to our guests' website as well. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you so much.
Until next time,
thank you.
Hit 'em straight.